continues his run. The back heel for Sergio Roberto. One-time cross for Luis Suarez. Oh. Luis Suarez with the opener.
Bonaventura again. Backer with a run ahead of him. Suso to his right. Here is Suso, who sends San Siro wild.
Boys all around him. Has to try and block it out. Up against Anthony Lopez. He scores confidently.
Lewandowski goes through the goal. He just can't do it. You just cannot be that good. That is an amazing goal.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to the European Football Podcast. This week we're doing a special on the first leg of Champions League. 15 goals to score. This week I think we'll be starting here with the first big game of the tie, and that was Paris-Barca, with Paris absolutely dominating at home, ripping Barca to shreds. Many commentators have said, is this an end of an era? What do we think?
Draxler's hovering over it as well. It's Di Maria, and it's 1-0! Paris Saint-Germain, brilliantly taken! He started the game wonderfully, now he's got a goal!
That was one of two for Di Maria, was it?
Yeah, that was his first goal. Yeah, his free kick. Where it all started.
Yeah, all went downhill from there for Barcelona.
It was a beautiful free kick, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fantastic.
He had
a fantastic game in it overall.
I think the entire PSG side had a brilliant game against Barcelona. You know, I think no one really expected the performance like that. You know, both teams struggling in their respective leagues so far this season, and PSG had come out and obviously not only just to score four goals, but to not concede any and not let Barcelona get an away goal. It's a huge, huge task for Barcelona when they go back to the new camp. And, you know, PSG don't really need to do a lot. Barcelona need to come out. They need to express themselves a bit more than perhaps they're used to in a home leg of the Champions League. But, you know, to see Barcelona potentially getting knocked out in a round of 16 is quite surprising.
Yeah, MSN just weren't present at all, Leila, in that game. I mean, In stark contrast, with PSG, their front three of Draxler, Di Maria, and Cavani, of all people, and I know we've taken the mick out of him a little bit, but you know they were all played up for that game. They were all fantastic. Although, personally, I think Barca's defence was chronic. They really just didn't seem to know what the heck they were doing. And PSG, rightfully in that game, came away as winners. They were the best team. They fully deserved it. If anywhere Barca are going to be able to pull off a strong result, it is going to be at the Nou Camp, obviously. But that is one heck of a mountain for them to climb, and they need to turn their performance around completely. Otherwise, I think the favourites, a lot of people have been putting them down to, will be out in the round of 16, which that would be one of the shocks so far of the tournament.
Yeah, I think it'll be really, really hard for Barca to claw this tie back, especially if their defence doesn't play as bad as they did on Tuesday night. They'll still need to keep out this front three of Di Maria, Cavani, and Draxler, who Draxler seems to fit straight into that left wing spot for PSG, and he was absolutely phenomenal at the weekend, like the rest of the team. I just think it wasn't even Barca's defence that was weak. Titi had a terrible game, admittedly, but their midfield looked slow, leggy, and you looked at PSG's midfield compared to them. They ran the show. Rabiot really impressed me. We all know the qualities that Verratti possesses, and we've spoken about it a few times before. But Rabiot is one player who I can see having a big future based on that performance. If he keeps that up, he could go for millions to another club. But I think it'll be interesting to see how Barca approach the next game, because obviously they need to score at least four goals to take it to extra time, but they need to make sure they don't concede an away goal.
Yeah, it definitely will be. I mean, no side has ever overturned a 4-0 deficit in the Champions League history. Where you've got the two legs, no team has come from four goals behind and progressed further in the competition. So Barcelona, if they do it, they'll be history makers, they'll be record breakers, and you know, we will have to give them all the credit they deserve, because scoring five goals and not conceding against, quite frankly, a PSG side who in the home leg were out for the kill and will probably be going for more in the away leg, just to prove that they are real contenders. You know, PSG have been the team that's been there or thereabouts in the last few seasons. We've seen them in previous years with Zlatan Ibrahimovic as their mainstay figure. Now they've
sort of built around him, and now he's left, he's gone to Man United, but they do have sort of a nice backbone to that side. When you talk about Verratti and Rabiot in the midfield, they're building up a nice partnership. The defence is proving to do good as well,
and I think, yeah, you guys have mentioned it, Edinson Cavani, he's really sort of coming to his own since Zlatan Ibrahimovic has left, and I think now him as their sort of main striker, and players like Di Maria, like Draxler, like the young players they've got coming through as well, playing around him, I think they are definitely being put in good stead for the future. And it's just disappointing that they aren't perhaps translating this sort of form into the form that we expect them to have in Ligue 1. So,
well, certainly Unai Emery will be looking at this game as a real saving grace for him, because he has come under a lot of criticism since he's come from Sevilla. But this will be seen as a real victory, taking out, whilst a slightly, Barca haven't performed up to their usual standards this season. They've looked a bit disjointed throughout, which we've seen. They still won the games, but they are behind Real. I think they're, what, 1 point behind, but Real have two games in hand. Mm. They lack cohesion. And on the other side of things, for Barca's manager, it really does not look like he will stay at the end of the season. There's a lot of talk, and he seems a bit apprehensive about staying. He's getting tetchy with the media after the game.
Yeah, well, I think that's just the sign of the pressure telling. I think the problem, in my opinion, for Barcelona this season, when we've looked at it, has been there's a couple of areas of the team which aren't clicking, and they're areas which then costing the whole team. I think Iniesta is on the downhill now. He's not, his number of passes he's averaging per game, his number of shots he's taking, and his number of successful dribbles are all, I think they're drastically lower than they have been for any of his previous seasons. And in a way, it's to be expected, because he is getting old. He's in his 30s now. You know, he can't keep it up forever, obviously. But the replacements that they've got for him, I mean, Andre Gomez was lined up as the potential replacement for him. He has not at all shown any of those figures. I mean, if anything, Gomez's purchase, a lot of people said, was just so that Real Madrid couldn't get him, realistically. And he hasn't performed to the extent they want. Neymar, of course, is the other big player that, you know, this year specifically has just, well, since 2017, has just not appeared at all. And he's probably been pulling MSN's numbers, which they've been getting fantastic ones the last 2 years. He's been pulling their numbers down in comparison to, say, BBC, which have, you know, although Ronaldo has been performing very well and Bale has always been out for a while, it's a bit of a weird thing to notice that Barca's numbers are just dropping off because a few of their key members of that team just can't keep up anymore.
I think you have to have a look at the manager's selection for that game as well. I think their midfield looked leggy and slow, and when you're playing someone like Busquets and Iniesta together with Andre Gomez, you need someone who can do the running, and Iniesta's not going to be able to do that at this age, and Busquets is nearing his 30s now, so he won't be. I was surprised Rakitic started on the bench. I really think Rakitic is an awesome player, and I watched a lot of him in the Euros before Croatia went out, and last season for Barca, and he's a phenomenal player that can go box to box. And I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't start the next game. I saw when he came on at PSG, while he came on at, I think it was 3-0, he was there doing a lot of running, and you could see he was really the only player who could keep up with PSG's midfield. And I was really shocked that he wasn't picked for the first game, because I think he's one of Barca's best midfielders.
I think he is, but certainly there has been talk this season of this lack of fluidity, this lack of cohesion within the team. He's been seen as one of those players who has dropped again, like Neymar, dropped their standards a little, not quite performing up to the obviously very high standards they set themselves, but it seems to be a struggle. Well, the other game that night was a bit closer, and again, probably we'd say a bit of an upset. I mean, Dortmund again, just a bit underperforming this year, not quite doing as you'd expect for a team with that quality. Thomas Tuchel's a very highly rated manager. They had a host of chances. Aubameyang did not have the best game. I can't remember how many
penalties as well, didn't he?
Missed a penalty. I mean, is it Emerson or Edison, the Benfica keeper?
Edison.
He had. I mean, he put.
He was very good. Yeah.
Good few saves, and ex-Fulham striker Kostas Mitroglou.
Well, he's had a complete renaissance since he's arrived at Benfica. I mean, him and Jonas are actually a very good partnership, and I know on paper Dortmund looked the stronger team, and in theory they have the better manager. I mean, Benfica are one of those teams that you never can rule out, because they do so well. Actually, I mean, obviously they dominate their domestic league at the moment, they are, because Porto have dropped off the pace and Sporting haven't quite lived up to all the expectation that people have been putting in them for the last few years. But I mean, in a way, that gives them then the freedom to really try and express themselves in the Champions League and get pumped up for those big these big games which they've got to be playing. And they're at home as well, which is obviously, you know, we say it's a huge advantage. They don't have to deal with the yellow wall, obviously, which can be a really intimidating presence and helps Dortmund a lot. But I think it sort of sums up Dortmund this season. They've just been struggling. They haven't quite been clicking. And although they had chances in this game, although they were denied several times by Edison brilliantly, they just... And you could see the frustration on the players as the game went on. Nothing was going their way for them in that match. And full credit to Benfica, but I think Dortmund will really be... they'll be looking forward to the home game, I think, to try and get some revenge and to try and hopefully over... It's only a one-goal deficit they've got to overturn, so not quite the challenge Barca are facing.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's only one goal, but Dortmund failed to score an away goal. I'm going to be talking about away goals a lot, because I think that they play a crucial part in European football. Dortmund will go home, and yes, Benfica have to come up against the yellow wall, the infamous yellow wall that, you know, that alone can cause you to get nervous at the back in your defence, and Benfica might fall and might succumb to what a lot of sides we see in the German league do when they come up against that sort of support. But I think, yeah, Aubameyang will be... He'll be quite upset that he didn't manage to get a goal in that game. And, you know, Borussia Dortmund, in the group stage, they scored something like 21 goals in the group stage. And we all thought, as you said, Nathan, going into this game, Dortmund were favourites. Going up against the Benfica side, who always, again, they're one of the sort of bogey teams in European football.
Often underrated.
Yeah, they are always one of those teams that when a team comes up against them and gets drawn against them, they're like, well, this isn't perhaps... You know what the draw that we wanted, but it could have been a lot worse. But then again, I think that sort of plays to the strength of Benfica. They go into these knockout games knowing that other teams are slightly underrating them, so that they don't really feel that pressure as these other so-called big sort of top eight teams in Europe would feel. So I think Benfica, credit where credit's due, you know, to get a 1-0 win at home and prevent Dortmund from scoring an away goal, you know. If Benfica come out at Dortmund and score an early goal, Dortmund are going to be on the back foot for the majority of that game. Benfica will allow Dortmund to come onto them, and then they'll look for gaps in that defence, and they will try and maybe even score a second on the counter attack. And I think Benfica certainly have a good chance of going through to the last eight.
Certainly, if Dortmund panic, their defence has not been solid at all really to this season. They've struggled a bit, losing Hummels in the summer. We've mentioned it time and time again, but there's just lacked a sense of solidity in that back line. And as you say, Benfica will have the opportunity to take advantage of Dortmund's perhaps hastiness, because we've seen they're a young side, and we've mentioned it before, they're sometimes a little bit... Maybe they lack the mental strength to come through sort of difficult challenges for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's when you look to your veterans to pull the team round. And, you know, Royce is really the most experienced player for them in that sense. And he needs to probably get that team worked. Aubameyang, it's going to be interesting to see how he responds. I think he'll come out with a point to prove that after that, you know, after missing so many chances, I think he's going to want to set things right. But I think the big actually issue is going to be with Benfica now, because they won't really be going into this game now as underdogs like they have, and that's what they thrive on. Like Jack said, they thrive on that environment. They're going to be going in now really at the moment it's looking like as potential favourites, or at least Dortmund will no longer be taking this as a, not so much a joke, but as sort of an easy game that they can probably win. They're going to be really up for it and really determined, and it's going to be how Benfica responds to that. I agree with Jack, actually. I think they'll probably sit back and try and absorb a lot of that pressure and then hit Dortmund on the counter-attack, because like you said, Nathan, as well, you know, Dortmund's defence is shaky at best at the moment, and that's something which Tuchel is going to probably be working on them endlessly at the on the training ground for, whilst he sits on high on his cherry picker watching them.
Well, Napoli went 1-0 up on Wednesday night, and suddenly I had hope that all the underdog teams were going to suddenly go through and be impressive. It didn't work out for Napoli.
It was a bizarre goal from Insigne, especially considering Keylor Navas' position for it. He was quite a far way away from his goal. He was sort of just about 3 or 4 yards outside of his box, and he started backtracking as the Real Madrid defence lost the ball, and Insigne just pounced. He saw Keylor Navas off his line, and it was a brilliant finish. But like you say, you know, Real Madrid bounced straight back. Benzema, brilliant goal in the 18th minute, and from then on, it was really just Real Madrid's game. They controlled it. Napoli never really looked threatening in the second half. And, you know, Real Madrid, I think, obviously going into this, they were favourites. They'll be comfortable going into the second leg. Although, having conceded an away goal, I think Napoli will struggle. Although at home, they will struggle to try and break down this Real Madrid defence.
It's interesting you point out Navas's positioning for the Real Madrid goal, because I watching the replays, I felt Pepe Reina also often was caught out of position. He kind of makes these very acrobatic dives to kind of just miss, just not save the goal. But often you think, well, if he kind of a bit to the right or a bit to the left or anticipating things, he'll make the save. And it seemed to be a kind of running theme throughout the game, because there were a lot of long range goals where the keepers possibly could have done better.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that Reina, I think, has been at fault up for a couple of seasons now. I mean, he is on the decline. He's not the player he was when he was at Liverpool. That was visible from actually his last couple of seasons at Anfield. He wasn't anywhere near the shot stopper used to be. His positioning, I think, is an issue, and I think actually the main thing, I mean, he's a leader, you can tell, because he likes to pump up and motivate the team from the back, but he doesn't seem to be able to read the game very well anymore. He, like you said, Nathan, that's a big issue, because that helps players like Kroos, of course, you know, when you've got such a long shot specialist like him, and, you know, a big powerhouse in Casemiro, who in my opinion was fantastic that game, and also very underrated really as a player, I think, is an issue for him. But when you've got those guys who can hit a ball at a great distance, it's something which either points to a naivety on Reina's part, or I don't know. I mean, it just seemed to be he didn't seem quite be able to anticipate things as much as he used to be. I mean, he makes up for them with these these fantastic long diving saves, which he thinks, you know, will grab the pundits and it make everyone forget them. But if you can't really do the basics as a keeper in terms of reading the game and working out, okay, Kroos has got a good long shot, I need to be ready for this, instead of just, oh, Kroos has got it, he's probably going to pass it away, oh, well, there you go, that's a goal in. I mean, that was a flaw with him. And I think Navas, on the flip side, was just, in my opinion, I think he was unlucky with that Insigne goal. He's a very good keeper, and he's shown it the last couple of seasons, but Napoli were underdogs going into it. They'll be happy. I mean, the only positive they can really say is, well, at least we Madrid didn't keep a clean sheet. We have got something we can take into going the home game. But yeah, it's like, well, I think for Napoli, it's not quite all over, but it's going to be very hard for them now to overturn really one of the two tournament favourites, in my opinion.
I wonder who that other tournament favourite.
Well, they also played on Wednesday night, I'm afraid.
Is that so? Yeah, I saw that game.
Yeah, I think we all did.
I was quietly confident, not confident, but feeling all right, hanging in there at half time. But then Koscielny got injured. And then I just thought, oh no.
Can we just talk about one issue? I had an extensive talk with one of my mates, and the Sanchez penalty.
Oh,
I know it's going to be a dubious decision that we can discuss for hours on end, but I honestly don't think it was a penalty.
No.
Lewandowski had eyes for the ball. I know in the laws of the game and whatever it says, you know, if you're being kicked inside the box, then, you know, it's going to be a penalty with no card and whatever. We can go into the laws of football all what we want, but you watch the replays. Lewandowski had eyes for the ball. Obviously, if the ball's coming in,
he doesn't mean it.
First instinct as a player, as a defender inside of your box, is to get rid of the ball and kick it as hard as you can. He doesn't see Koscielny come across him. He's got eyes for the ball the entire time. I think the referee has made a bit of a rash decision. I think, you know, obviously Koscielny, as an Arsenal player, he's going to be wanting to get across the ball, get and try and get possession back for his team. But I don't think that there was any sort of intent, anything malicious about it. I don't think that he intended to kick Koscielny. But then again, you know, in the eyes of the law, it is a penalty. Yeah. But I just don't think it should have been given. On the other hand, though, not Lewandowski, Robin's goal was insane. Yeah. I am Robin's. You know, he's known for doing that. He's known for playing on the right, cutting back on his left, and his left foot is just insane.
I mean, he was given so much time by the Arsenal defenders.
Yeah, he was.
Gibbs just showed him on the inside. Coquelin, I think it was Coquelin, he just let him waltz past him, and it was just too easy. You can't give someone...
Well, this is it. I mean, we've seen him do it time and time again, and yet so many teams still struggle to defend against him, which is what I find fascinating. If you know that Robin has got a mean left foot and he's going to be playing out on the right, he's going to be coming to try and cut back inside, you'd think that a lot more left backs would try and show him down the line. But as we saw with Arsenal, you know, I don't know if they expect Robin to change, but I think Robin is going to be staying like that for the remainder of his career. Yeah. I mean, he's only got a couple of years left, one trick pony.
It shouldn't be that hard for world-class defenders to defend against him, but I guess Gibbs isn't in that bracket of world-class defenders.
Well, no, it's interesting. I mean, he's second choice left back. I'm not sure what's been going on with Monreal. He hasn't had the best season. In the case of Robin, yeah, Arsenal probably expect each year he's probably going to get a little bit worse.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of think maybe it is because every year it seems to happen. Robin's probably the winger I almost fear most. Whenever he's going forward, he's just so quick, so good on the ball, so agile, still at, what is he, 33?
Yeah, 33, I think.
And it just amazes me that he's still
got that pace as well.
Still got the pace, and he's still doing it for the full 90.
What I think helped a lot, which I noticed when we were watching this, is that in typical Ancelotti style, his two wingers, Robin and Costa, were constantly changing sides, which I think was probably something that probably confused Gibbs a lot, because, I mean,
Gibbs is easily confused.
Yeah,
though,
I'm not saying, I mean, he's not a fantastic, let's be honest, he's not a quality left back, really. I think he was just put in there because maybe Wenger thought that if he gives Monreal a rest, he might perform better in another game, worst game, in my opinion, to then decide to throw Gibbs in for, because, you know, Douglas Costa is a similar sort of player in the sense he's a very tricky player, he's very fast and he's incredibly agile, and, you know, players like left backs like Gibbs, and also I probably throw in there because I've seen it do it so many times, Alberto Moreno, you know, they can't read the game that well. They can't think, oh, hang on, this is someone that we know he's going to cut inside, he's going to think, right, mark him, run at him, oh, he's danced past me. Well, that's the end of it.
Even if, like, you're someone like Gibbs, you must have been told in the pre-match build-up, you're going to be marking Robin today. He's a one-trick pony. All he's going to do is drop a shoulder, cut in and shoot. Show him outside. It's really not that hard. I mean, I play full-back when I play 11-a-side, and if I know someone's stronger in cutting in, then it's fairly easy to show them outside. And I know it's a different level of quality, but when you're at the level of Arsenal, you're expecting your left-back to do a simple job and show the winger on the outside where he's weak, and Gibbs just couldn't do that. And yeah, maybe he wasn't helped by the sitting midfielder on that side who was just sat deep. And I just think the big moment in the Arsenal game was when they lost Koscielny to the injury. I think Koscielny is so important to that back line, and I think since then they just capitulated, and you could see after the game Sanchez was sort of sat on his own in the touchline and everyone's heads were down. And I just think this might be where once again Arsenal's season begins to capitulate in the league.
I mean, we can talk about this for hours on end, but there always seems to be that sort of weird cycle with Arsenal where at the start of the season they say they're going to win the league, and then they sort of make one last ditch signing in the summer transfer window,
usually on deadline day,
around about January time they start dropping off a bit, and then the Champions League comes in and hits, and it always seems to be when they get knocked out of the Champions League in the round of 16, it always seems to start maybe a bit of an uphill struggle. They sort of drop off in form in the Premier League, and okay, so they've been finding themselves in fourth place for last God knows how many seasons. But I think Arsene Wenger should definitely sit back and have a look and evaluate whether or not he'll be able to do this for the next coming seasons, because Arsenal and a lot of their fans have been calling for him to leave for the last few seasons. I think that they need to get their pick their heads up. They've obviously got the clash with Sutton United coming up. I think that they need to pick their heads up. Well, I mean, it could be a big game in the context of Arsenal's season.
Yeah.
You know, coming off of a 5-1 defeat away from home, you're virtually out of the Champions League. Arsenal realistically aren't going to be able to win the Premier League in my mind, and I think that they need to pick themselves up and just avoid embarrassment against Sutton United, because I think that would be the lowest of the low, and a lot of fans will start to really turn on Wenger if they don't win that game.
I disagree that most Arsenal fans want Wenger gone. I would say that the loudest Arsenal fans want Wenger gone, and
yeah,
certainly it's a case where, I mean, this season especially, I think it's probably the year where every year it's always, well, one or two players off. And I think this year it felt like there was depth in every position. Maybe you can say striker, but we still have so many very efficient.
Yeah.
People can call Giroud not top quality, but
he gets goals. That's the thing.
Giroud's got loads of big goals this season. Yeah. I personally would have started him.
He's
Wednesday
done very well against
Sanchez
Bayern Munich. He's got a really good record against them in general. I mean, I don't want Wenger to go. If he did go, I wouldn't be averse to it, but I think the only person to come in would have to be Allegri, in my opinion. But
I think it's time for Wenger to step down, not only just for Arsenal's future, but for his reputation as well.
Yeah.
If he keeps going like this for the next four or five years, not winning trophies, it's going to ruin his legacy. And his legacy should be one of someone who brought Arsenal from an average team to up to a team that consistently finished in the top fours, won leagues in the early 2000s, late 90s, and has done very well in Champions League over the years. Yeah, they've been knocked out in the last 16, the last 5 years, but before that they've got to semi-finals, quarter-finals, the final in, what was it, 2005?
Yeah.
And I think just for his legacy, I think he should step down, take maybe a boardroom role at the club, and someone like Allegri or Diego Simeone should step in.
I saw an interesting article the other day from Paul McInnes talking about it, and certainly it does make sense, where he sort of speaks about for Wenger to step down for a man who has literally spent his entire life managing. I mean, he had a short coaching career, but for so long he's managed, for kind of so long he's been at Arsenal, and he, unlike Sir Alex Ferguson, for example, he doesn't really have any other hobbies. Everything is football for him. And he was, McInnes was saying that for him to wake up and not be a football manager is probably just too frightening a prospect for him to ever kind of want to step down.
I think last point with it, the big reason I think that a lot of people, especially the pundits, really, when I've been looking at the last, since that game, have been, you know, out for blood on Wenger and all of them calling that he should give up. I think the big motive for a lot of people is the fact that his contract is on the point of ending, and, you know, with the fact that the last time it was near the end, he picked up by winning the FA Cup, and then he was given the extension to the end of this season. I think at the moment everyone was sort of thinking that it was kind of like a bit of a last chance. So, okay, you've got this extra time, now go and maybe win one more Premier League, or finally win the Champions League for him or something like that. But I think the feeling, I know I agree with you on that, Nathan, that I think there are actually more people for Wenger in than there are for Wenger out. The problem is the Wenger in people are actually quieter. They don't really, you know, they don't take to Arsenal fan TV, for example, and there's sort of that rant which one of the fans is, which is going around YouTube, which is pretty damning on Wenger. I watched it last night, and I don't know, in my opinion, what Wenger should do at this point. I would say to him, you know, probably step down the end of the season, or say you're going to, and that gives Arsenal time to plan for the new season instead of leaving it to the last minute, which I think it is going to go down to in typical Wenger style. But I think personally Wenger is now, he's out of ideas, and I think it's looking like his time has unfortunately ended, which is a shame, because like Amar said, you know, he did fantastic things in the early part of his Arsenal career. Obviously the Invincibles is the highlight, and, you know, it's a shame that we've actually watched them over the last few seasons, one of the big managers just sort of be unable to take that next step or to reinvent himself.
Well, I'll tell you who did beat Bayern Munich in the Champions League this year, and they won again last night. It was Rostov. 4-0 at home to Sparta Prague. That's my allocated Rostov shout out. Now we'll move on to other Europa League games. Spurs, these Europa League games are interesting. Spurs did a Spurs.
Oh, they've broken in. It's Milicevic. It's the cutback. It's the second attempt. And that's the opening goal for Jeremy.
It's quite interesting. Despite all this talk about, obviously, Arsenal did get thrashed in the Champions League. At least they were in the Champions League. Spurs losing to Ghent. I mean, I didn't see this game, but I did kind of have a good look at highlights and I went through the kind of main points over on BT Sport. But it seemed that broadly they were on top. They had quite a few chances but couldn't put anything away.
I watched the second half of the game and the first 15 minutes.